Welcome back, adventurers, to another deep dive into the frozen north. Today, we are unpacking Chapter 58, Yithrin. And honestly, this feels like the moment the campaign has been building toward for a very, very long time.
Oh, absolutely. We have finally reached the Netherese city. Sandy's gang has punched their ticket, descended the half-mile tunnel, and stepped out into, well, essentially a frozen, tilted, neon-lit graveyard?
It's such a striking image. They step out of the mouth of this tunnel and see Yithrin. But it's not just a ruin, it's a time capsule wrapped in ice. The description of the green and purple lighting casting no warmth really sets the tone. It's hauntingly beautiful, but fundamentally hostile.
It gives me major haunted amusement park vibes. You've got this giant 21-foot faceless statue, a coliseum with giant electrical tuning forks, and towers leaning away from the party like they're recoiling in disgust. The architecture itself hates them.
And rightly so, given the intrusion. But before we get to the heavy plot points, can we talk about the party immediately starting to loot the gift shop? Specifically, the Halls of Silk?
Classic D&D behavior. Oh, look, a city frozen for thousands of years. Hey, does this robe fit me? Velen finding that shifting silk fabric was a cool touch of world building, though. It shows the magic tech level here was leaps and bounds above what the surface world has now.
Exactly. And Tuki immediately figuring out its arcane technology, similar to his mask-making tools, was a great character moment. He uses it to disguise himself as a drow, thinking to catch people off guard. It's brilliant, even if there's no one really around to fool yet.
Well, except for the things lurking in the shadows, Delnas definitely felt like they were being watched. But the creepiest environmental detail for me wasn't the monsters. It was the streetlights.
Oh, the flickering green lights? That was unsettling.
Yeah, Tuki realizes these things are leaking raw magic. It's giving him a headache, hearing a buzz. It's essentially magical radiation. The containment fields are failing after centuries. It puts a darker spin on the wonder of Netheril. It's not just old magic, it's decaying, toxic magic.
Which leads to Tuki's amazing line to Doug. I don't think you're having any baby gugs if you kept that cloth in your pants pocket. A little radioactive humor to lighten the mood before they stumble into the prison sequence.
The prison sequence was straight out of a horror movie. Arcane locked cells, frozen bodies, and then an operating theater with invisible straps holding nothing.
Or so they thought. This puzzle was handled really well. Delnas and Herax figure out it's not just invisibility, it's a sequester spell. They have to dispel the magic to reveal the victim.
And lo and behold, enter Xerifon, the man out of time. This guy wakes up on an operating table, terrifyingly confused, thinking he was just put under for surgery a few hours ago.
The horror of his realization is palpable. He's asking, "Didn't you tie me up?" and panicking about experiments. We find out he was a manservant to the big bad Irea Larthus and got thrown in jail for disobedience.
The scars on his chest? Yikes! It's restitched surgical wounds. Donis's immediate reaction, figure out what they put inside him before it explodes like an alien, was grim but practically sound.
It also highlights the thematic darkness of Yithrin. The wizards weren't just powerful, they were cruel. They were experimenting on their own servants, trying to make chimeras and hybrids. Xerifon represents the human cost of that magical hubris.
And then we get the math drop. This blew my mind. He thinks the year is 3516 Netherese year. The party does the conversion and realizes he's been in stasis since minus 343 Dale Reckoning.
That is over 1,800 years. He has slept through the fall of his civilization, the rise of others, and nearly two millennia of history.
And tragically, he missed Karsus's Folly, the event that broke magic and crashed the floating cities, by only about 3 years. He was frozen just before the end of the world, so he has no context for why everything is broken.
His reaction to the Manshoon name was pretty funny, too. What the hell's is a Manshoon? Let me guess, a wizard? He hates wizards so much.
Can you blame him? They strapped him to a table for 18 centuries. But he becomes the most valuable NPC instantly because he explains the mechanics of the chapter. If they want the Mythalar, the nuclear reactor of this city, they need to get into the central spire.
Right. The spire is locked by a force field, essentially. To get in, they need to perform the Rite of the Arcane Octad, which means fetch quest.
It's a very dangerous fetch quest. They have to visit 8 towers, each representing a school of magic, to get the passcodes. It's like the world's deadliest college orientation.
And Xerophon warns them about the Magian, magical constructs that can compel you with words. We also see the class divide here. Xerophon was low-born Netherese. He points out that the wizards were the elite and everyone else was expendable.
That moment when Tuki pokes Xerophon's scars and offers him an explosive model ship, pure chaos. But Xerophon declining and looking at the ruined city at the end was the kicker.
Yeah, he looks up at the ice ceiling, sees his magnificent flying city buried underground, and just screams, "You idiots!" at the ghosts of the wizards.
It sums up the whole chapter perfectly. Great power, zero common sense, and total catastrophe. Now, Sandy's gang just has to clean up the mess without getting radiated or dissected.
We'll have to see how they handle the first of the 8 towers next time. Rest up, regain those spell slots, because the Arcane Octad is officially in session.